Secrets.
Hey there, I'm Amy Smith.
And I'm LaDonna Humphrey. Welcome to Deep Dark Secrets, a podcast that shines a light in some really dark places. And today we'll be continuing our discussion into that dark and twisted world of human trafficking. In fact, in this episode, we will continue our discussion into the life of a pedophile sex trafficker named John Norman.
And for those of you who are just now tuning in, let me give you a quick recap. John Norman was the head of a notorious sex trafficking ring that supplied young boys to men all across the United States. He was first arrested in Texas in 1973 after police found almost 100,000 index cards in his home that contained names of men who allegedly paid for sex with young boys. The Dallas Police Department referred to Norman as the pedophile of pedophiles. So in other words, Norman was a sick monster. He actually advertised kids for rent, and then he sent these kids around the country to be sexually abused by men. Norman would put ads out for his operation that was called the Odyssey Foundation. And he was notorious for luring runaways, young men in foster care, and young men who were vulnerable in some sort of way.
Oh, he really was a sick monster, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Well, Norman's evil activities actually didn't even stop there. This guy was depraved. And in fact, as it almost always does, we've discovered since we've started this journey down human trafficking, the information that we have to share about Norman gets much, much worse. As it turns out, Norman was connected to one of the most notorious serial killers the United States has ever seen, John Wayne Gacy. And for those of you who may not know or remember, in 1978, John Wayne Gacy was arrested and charged and then convicted for 33 murders.
Dang.
All of his victims were young boys, and they were believed to have been murdered between the years of 1972 and 1978. Authorities excavated what is now known as his infamous crawl space, which contained 26 of his victims. The rest are believed to have been dumped in a river. John Wayne Gacy was reported to be a very prominent member of his community. And after throwing huge parties, he even dressed up as what is now known as the infamous Pogo the Clown for children's birthday parties. He was a sick, sick man. The entire John Wayne Gacy story is so incredibly creepy and disturbing and disgusting in every adjective you can throw at it. This guy was sick.
Oh, absolutely. And it just gets more interesting from here because it ties back to John Norman. And I kind of feel like I need to write down all these people's names because there's like so many players here that are all in the same sick world. It's mind-boggling. But after Gacy was arrested, during his initial confession, he asked the police a strange question. He asked them if anyone else had been caught.
Wait, what? Why would he ask that question if he was a lone killer? Was he referencing Norman?
Great question. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they knew. I don't think we'll ever know. But the connection between Gacy and Norman, it starts to become a little clearer because during that confession, Gacy also claimed that his house was being used by multiple people, which would corroborate, like with the Delta projects, you know, the dorms that we talked about in the last episode. And allegedly, one of those victims that was in Gacy's house was actually killed while Gacy was out of town. Even one of his victims, I think his name was Jeffrey Rignall. He said that there was someone else in the house while Gacy raped and was attempting to murder him.
Oh, wow. I do remember that. I do remember reading that he said that he thought somebody else was in the house. So that's scary.
Oh, I mean, yeah, while all this stuff is going on. But what really connected the men, I mean, in my opinion, is that paperwork that showed, remember, Philip Pesky, he was employed and he took payment on three separate occasions from John Wayne Gacy's construction company. So Pesky, if you recall, was an accomplice of John Norman. And let's face it, I don't believe in coincidences. These men had to know each other because they had the same tendencies, the same sickness.
You mean they were pedophile scumbags? Those tendencies?
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, those.
Oh, that's really thought-provoking that they had that kind of connection, because that starts to point towards these, I don't know what else to call them, sickos running in packs. I have always thought that that was the case. So I find this to be very fascinating that we're able to potentially connect some of these pieces together.
Yeah, no, it really is. I mean, once you start deep diving into one of them and then somebody else's name comes up and then somebody else's name comes up, it was a glee club of sorts that no one would ever want to be a member of.
Well, unless you were a pedophile scumbag.
Yeah. And then that worked out for them.
Well, the strange connections don't end there. If you go back to the early 80s, when 18 women turned up dead and mutilated in like a ritualistic fashion in Chicago, one of the would-be victims who managed to escape, and she escaped from a van, and she claimed it was after a group of people had tried to kill her. So she, you know, gets away, you know, goes to police. She's panicked. She tells them what happened and they start searching for the van. So the police eventually find the van and then they find the owner, a man named Robin Geit. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I'm not sure that I care because Robin wasn't a good guy anyway. So we're going to call him Rob. Anyway, Rob becomes the prime suspect in this crime, and they're questioning him. And while they're questioning him, you know, they were still doing this great sweep of the city to see if there were any other people connected, because this woman had said she had escaped this van full of people. And lo and behold, law enforcement find three other associates of Robin's. So they bring these people in for questioning, and apparently these three people have a lot to say. And I mean, a lot. They go on to confess that they are members of a satanic cult. They claimed that they abduct women, that they performed all kinds of mutilations, and that they sometimes dabbled in cannibalism.
Oh, gosh.
Of course, immediately I'm thinking, oh, okay, well, they're admitting to being death fetishers, but I won't go there.
Yeah. But I regress.
Yes. But so they, you know, they admit to all these things. Robin, however, never confesses. In fact, he goes out of his way to keep his mouth shut, which is interesting because everybody else, you know, they're singing like a bird. But maybe Robin keeps his mouth shut for a reason. Because as it turns out, Robin was reportedly a former employee of John Wayne Gacy.
Of course he was.
Yes, of course. And reportedly, he worked for Gacy's construction company. And I just think it's strange that here we have yet another serial killer slash sadist that's working with Gacy. I mean, these men were connected. And I don't know, I'm not trying to be dramatic, but okay, maybe I am. But it screams serial killer enterprise, Amy.
Well, yeah. I mean, what kind of construction company was Gacy running?
I mean, the kind that was a front for trafficking young men and murder, potentially. I mean, this story, I mean, you can't make this kind of stuff up. But there are too many connections to some really, really bad players. And I just keep coming back to that term, serial killer enterprise. That's what it was.
Yeah. It's too bad he didn't call it that. He would have had a lot of promotion going on there. Ugh. Well, that evil network of connections, it doesn't stop there. So in the early 1970s, we're back in Texas, a string of murders occurred that resembled the horrors that Illinois would soon face in 1978. So this time, the murderer was a man named Dean Corll. So Dean, like Norman and Gacy, he liked young boys. And in fact, Dean even had an accomplice to his crimes. It was a 17-year-old boy named Elmer Wayne Henley. So Elmer would lure his high school and neighborhood friends to Dean, and Dean would pay him with money and with drugs. So he was kind of like his handler. He would go get the boys, and then Dean would pay him for his work. Eventually, police recovered 17 bodies of young boys buried under a boat shed. Not only were 17 discovered, but then there was another 11 spread out across various bodies of waters, all believed to be victims of Dean Corll. And in a strange twist, Dean was eventually murdered by Elmer. Elmer killed him while Dean was in the middle of raping another young boy. So maybe Elmer didn't get paid. Maybe he was jealous. I don't know. But I find that interesting that, you know, here Dean recruited this 17-year-old kid, and then eventually that would be Dean's demise.
Interesting. I actually didn't even know that about this case. And so that makes me want to go and research it because I'm curious, had Elmer been a victim? Did he have some sort of post-traumatic, you know, flashback and remembered that he had been abused by Dean and then ended up killing him? Did he feel guilty because this was a young boy? I need to look into that because I honestly absolutely didn't realize that that's how Dean died.
Yeah, I mean, how twisted is that? Since Corll was killed before he could have been arrested for the horrors of his crime, he just kind of faded into the night until the internet and my favorite people, the armchair detectives, they dug him up, so to speak.
Okay, that was kind of funny that you said dug him up, but... I mean, you have to have a little bit of dark humor when you're telling these kind of stories.
Absolutely.
I mean, because the story is creepy. And speaking of creepy, I think it's incredibly scary and creepy how much Dean and Gacy had in common when it came to their victim selection.
Oh my gosh, yes.
I did research that a little. And in that research, I found that Dean actually referenced that he actually idolized John Wayne Gacy and that there were these murders that he used for inspiration, in particular that handcuff trick that John Wayne Gacy was so famous for, of how he tricked, you know, those boys into basically, you know, rendering themselves helpless because they played this game about can you get out of the handcuffs. And so
right
Dean really liked that trick and apparently tried it a few times himself. As sick as it is to believe and as sick as it is to say, I believe in this case, it's really true that birds of a feather flock together.
Mm-hmm.
They do. And so
no doubt.
You think about that, you know, those kind of people, you know, congregating together. And if you consider that, along with what I'm about to say, you may or may not be shocked because, are you ready for this?
I'm sitting down.
Dean also had a connection to John Norman.
Of course he did.
So if you recall, when we did our episode, our first episode on John Norman, in 1975, there was a raid and authorities seized thousands of images of child porn from John Norman. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
Okay. So in that raid of those thousands of photos, it turns out that 11 of those boys in the photographs were later identified as some of Dean Corll's victims.
Oh, wow.
So what this means is that Corll, at the very least, at the very, very least, he had access to that distribution network that Norman ran. And as I'm investigating this, doing this research, I also discovered that there were multiple times over the years that Dean actually admitted that he was involved in this large-scale pedophile child porn trafficking ring. And he frequently, get this, referred to a man named Norm that was running the quote-unquote ring.
Wow. I wonder if that's where all those index cards went. I wonder if Corll had them.
I don't know. Well, I think that those index cards were probably destroyed because there were so many names of politicians, judges, law enforcement, priests. I think that people made sure that those went bye-bye.
Yeah. Yeah. You're right. You are right. Maybe they just handpicked some, you know, some victims that they wanted to keep and then burn the rest of them.
And I also think that there's probably more of a connection between all of these people than we're ever really going to know because so much time has passed by. Mm-hmm. But it seems obvious to me that there was a very large scale, very deep-seated, you know, trafficking ring, snuff ring, whatever you want to call it, that was going on with these young boys. And it's just terrifying. It makes me sad to even think about, but it's really clear that that's what was happening.
Oh, yeah. And so many players. I mean, in this rabbit hole of horrors, you know, I also discovered that even in 1992, in an interview that Gacy gave, he claimed that Norman and the Delta Project, they were producing snuff films of young boys, possibly including some of Gacy's victims. So at least two of those victims believed to have been murdered by Gacy, and they were Kenneth Parker and Michael Marino. But they had last been seen alive close to where Norman had lived.
Wow.
I mean, the connections between the two is just, it just never ends. Gacy also maintained that John Norman was one of the men that had a key to his house, and he was adamant that Norman was the one committing these murders. Now, it's never been proven that Norman had a key to Gacy's house, but given all the circumstances of how these men were connected, it's really not a leap to consider that that story could be true.
Well, I tend to agree with you, Amy. I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think it's very, very apparent that there was a network of men that were trafficking young boys all across the United States. I think some of this trafficking ended in murder, and some of these kids were trafficked, I believe, to some of the worst serial killers that this country has ever seen. And we know for a fact, because we've already, you know, talked about him at length, that John Norman was behind this huge networking scheme all across the United States. I mean, and he had so many connections to some really bad men. And I'm just not surprised. I would not be shocked if we could ever, you know, definitely prove that he participated in some of those murders, because I think he did.
Oh, yeah. No, I totally agree with you. And I also think that maybe this is a good time to mention that as we were researching Norman for this episode, I actually came across some information that potentially ties him back to even another case that we recently covered.
What case?
You ready for this? Johnny Gosch.
Whoa, Johnny Gosch. Okay. What? Are you serious? Are you serious?
I am. Yep. You know, just when you think it couldn't get worse, It does. Yeah, I found some documentation where Paul Bonici, one of the child victims of the Franklin cover-up in Nebraska, mentioned an individual known as the Colonel. So this name, the Colonel, seems to be a recurring nickname that's found in various organized pedophilia cases, including that Johnny Gosch case and others. I discovered that none other than, yes, John Norman was mentioned as the Colonel in official records. And I also found, you'll love this, where other documents state that our friend Norman used the alias Colonel when he lived in Colorado. And if you remember from our episode on Johnny, Colorado is where Paul Bonici took the crew of America's Most Wanted to prove that there was a cabin where the Colonel imprisoned children inside the tunnels. You remember that?
I am speechless right now. I'm shocked.
I hope everyone is, because in my opinion, this points to something much bigger than you and I or anyone could ever imagine. But sadly, there has not been enough resources assigned to investigate this organized pedophile trafficking murder ring on the scale that it needs to be. But you know what? I really wish somebody would.
Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Yep, that we just discovered our new passion project.
Yeah, I think we've got some work to do.
Oh, we most certainly do. So listeners, buckle up and stay tuned. LaDonna and I aren't quite done with this story, and you can expect to hear more from us in the upcoming weeks.
But until then, please make plans to tune in next week as we continue our journey to expose the heinous world of sex trafficking.
We'll see you next week. Stay safe and remember, keep your lights on.
For exclusive content from this episode and other episodes, head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/deepdarksecrets. Sign up and you will receive Deep Dark Secrets merchandise, extra episodes, and much more. For more information about our podcast, visit deepdarksecretspodcast.com.